In 2012, the planet Venus will pass directly between the Sun and the Earth. This transit of Venus won't occur again until the year 2117. My name is Troy Klein, and welcome to Sun-Earth Day 2012, Shadows of the Sun. Many of our NASA missions play an enormous part in telling that incredible story, the story of our dynamic solar environment. In this podcast, we'll continue our series about the IBEX mission with Jacob Herrickhausen, an assistant professor at the University of Huntsville in Alabama. From an earlier podcast, you may remember that IBEX maps faint magnetic fields out in space by capturing images of neutral atoms that result from particle collisions along those magnetic fields. Scientists like Jacob use data from IBEX to make models of the processes occurring at the boundary of our solar system. To get started, I asked Jacob to describe what IBEX data looks like.
So IBEX data looks like just maps of the sky, essentially. So IBEX is looking at all different points in the sky, and at every point it's taking measurements, and it stitches all these measurements together to create a whole map of the sky. And that's the raw data of IBEX. And it's certainly not a picture in the classic sense. It looks at a different number of energy levels, energy bins. There's 11 of these different energies that IBEX is looking at, and so at each energy you create a whole map of the sky, and we look for things in that data. So it takes 6 months to produce a picture. What you would see, it's like of hills, basically. So you plot this out, you see sort of hills and valleys, and in these, where you have hills, means you have a stronger energetic neutral atom emission from those regions. Maybe where you have valleys, you have less emissions. And so you can look in different parts of the sky and compare how much flux you're getting from there.
Much of Jacob's work focuses on transforming that data into models. So I ask Jacob, what is modeling and how do scientists use it?
Yes, so modeling from my point of view is when you take equations of physics that you feel are applicable to a particular region of space or even of the Earth or any system. You take those equations and you believe that those equations really hold the key to the evolution of that region. And so what you then do is you actually solve those equations. So these are mathematical equations that we solve on a computer generally, because these are very complicated things. And really that set of equations is what I think of as the model. So it's really what you can then do is you can simulate reality by solving those equations. And you generally need to plug in some boundary conditions or some other parameters, perhaps, depending on the region that you're interested in. And by solving those equations, you can then simulate reality and compare it to the data. The underlying equations, you know, in a video game or in any of these physics-based games, like a racing car game or something like that, there's certain underlying physics, there are equations, and they are solved on a computer to simulate reality.
Towards the end of our interview, I asked Jacob to tell me how he got interested in science. Who or what event actually created that first spark?
So when I was young, maybe only just started elementary school, I was very interested in astronomy, things related to space, mainly because of seeing things on the television, documentary kind of style, things like NOVA kind of presentations. My parents also had some books on these things, and I used to like, you know, flipping through the pages. Even though I wasn't really reading at all, I was still interested in what I was seeing. And originally I thought, I want to be an astronaut. As I started to go through school, I was always good at mathematics, and so later I realized that the mathematics was a very useful tool for doing physics, and physics really is what underpins all of reality, all of the stuff occurring in space and astronomy-related things. So I started to really pursue that more than, you know, more than the astronaut side of it. So I got into the science part of it. And you know, at college I pursued math and physics, and I still do math and physics.
We'd like to thank Jacob for taking the time to talk to us today, and we'll be keeping our eye out for new information IBEX might find along the solar system's boundary. Here to tell you more about the additional education resources on the IBEX website is Lindsay Bartolone, the Education and Public Outreach Lead for the IBEX mission.
Download and read the IBEX, The Edge of the Solar System poster to view an artist's depiction of the heliosphere. On our website, in the student section, we have a series of frequently asked questions and answers about the IBEX mission and science.
You can find all of the information about this year's theme, Shadows of the Sun, on the Sun Earth Day website at sunearthday.nasa.gov. We'll continue to populate that website with the latest information about our upcoming programs, background resources, activities, and registration information. With the help of our friends from the Solar Dynamics Observatory, we've even included a new event-based Google Map. I hope you enjoyed this Sun Earth Day Highlights podcast. Upcoming podcasts will include interviews with additional NASA scientists, astronomers, educators, and media specialists from the award-winning NASA EDGE team. Don't forget to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter to join in on the discussion with our growing Sun Earth Day community. For all other details about the Sun Earth Day program, including information about our past Sun Earth Day themes, be sure to visit our website at sunearthday.nasa.gov. While there, don't forget to register in order to receive your free Sun Earth Day update. You can learn more about NASA by simply visiting www.nasa.gov.
This is Troy Klein signing off.